miles of folded wire. A whisper wants to reach a spark.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So before we get into the heavy science today, I want you to try to visualize something for me. Picture a sprawling city's electrical grid.
Right.
Okay, I am picturing it. Power lines everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You've got substations, transformers, routing energy all over the place. Now imagine a very specific light switch. But the catch here is that the light bulb it controls isn't in the same room. It's not even in the same building.
Right, that would be too easy.
Way too easy. This single light bulb is located miles and miles away across the city.
Wow. I mean, from an engineering standpoint, that creates a massive logistical hurdle. The signal from that specific switch has to travel that massive distance without, you know, accidentally turning on all the other lights in between.
Exactly.
It somehow bypassed thousands of other homes and businesses just to reach one single highly specific target.
And it's like trying to use a TV remote to change a channel, but on a television set that's sitting in an entirely different neighborhood.
Right, yeah.
And when we look at mammalian DNA, we are dealing with a really similar mystery. I mean, our genome is this incredibly dense, three-dimensional tangle of chromatin just stuffed into a microscopic nucleus.
Oh, absolutely stuffed. It's chaos in there.
It is. Yet we have these genetic control switches that regulate genes from distances that, at least on a cellular scale, are just astronomical.
They really are.
So today we are doing a deep dive into what really happens when the spatial limits of our genome's control switches are put to the test. Like, how do they reach their targets without getting lost in the 3D tangle of chromatin?
It's a huge question.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, I think the scientific consensus was that we kind of had the broad strokes of this process figured out.
We thought we did anyway.
Right. Yeah. We knew the genome wasn't just a straight line. You know, we knew it folded, but that architecture alone, just the physical folding of the DNA, it just doesn't explain the precision of these long-distance connections.
No, it doesn't. And getting to the bottom of that precision required some incredibly difficult in vivo experiments.
Oh, incredibly difficult.
So today, we celebrate the work of Grace Bauer, Evgeny Zikavon, and the collaborative teams at the University of California, Irvine, Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and their international partners who have advanced our understanding of long-distance gene regulation.
And this is major work.
Huge. It was published in the journal Nature, and honestly, the way they tackled this genomic puzzle that has stumped scientists for years is just phenomenal.
It really shifts our fundamental understanding of how the genome communicates internally.
It does. But to appreciate that shift, we should probably define the core problem here, right? This whole enhancer-promoter communication issue.
Yeah. That's a good place to start. So most people are pretty familiar with genes, right? The coding regions of DNA that act as the blueprint for making proteins.
Right, the actual instructions.
Exactly. But enhancers, on the other hand, those sit in the non-coding regions. So they operate as the literal switches that dictate when and where those genes are turned on.
And most of these transcriptional enhancers, they regulate their target genes over distances of maybe, I don't know, a few tens of kilobases, which, you know, is a relatively short commute in genomic terms.
Yeah, it's like going next door.
Right. But some enhancers, and particularly the ones controlling really critical developmental processes, they act over megabase distances.
Which is wild.
We are talking hundreds of thousands of base pairs away.
Right. And when that long-range communication fails, I mean, the consequences are severe. It leads to major developmental anomalies or, you know, various forms of cancer.
So figuring out how that communication physically works is a huge priority.
Definitely. And the leading theory for a long time relied heavily on 3D chromatin folding. Basically, structural proteins, specifically CTCF and cohesin, they act kind of like molecular zip ties.
Zip ties, I like that.
Yeah, they extrude the DNA into these large loops, which creates what we call topologically associating domains, or TADs for short. And the prevailing thought was, okay, these loops fold the DNA back on itself, bringing that distant enhancer physically right next to the target promoter.
Okay, wait, hold on. I want to pause on that theory for a second.
Sure.
Because if cohesin and CTCF are creating a loop that brings these two distant points together, why isn't that just the end of the story? I mean, if you bring the light switch and the light bulb into the exact same room through folding, it seems like the distance problem is solved, right?
See, that was the exact assumption that was widely held. But then experimental data started coming out that showed some real cracks in that model.
Cracks like what?
Well, researchers did these depletion experiments. They basically went in and globally disrupted those structural proteins. Exactly. They removed CTCF and cohesin from the equation entirely, basically destroying the TAD loops. And surprisingly, that global disruption only partially impaired the communication between enhancers and promoters.
Really? Only partially?
Yeah. Developmental gene expression turned out to be shockingly robust, even when the overarching TAD structures were completely dismantled.
Oh, wow. So that means the loop is really just the scaffolding. Like, it might bring the neighborhood together, but it definitely doesn't provide the exact street address, right? Or lock the connection in place.
Exactly. The looping brings the enhancer into the general vicinity, sure. But the data strongly suggested there had to be a missing genetic factor, like a specific sequence that actually establishes and maintains that connection.
And that missing factor is the theoretical gap this team decided to investigate.
Right, and the way they approached this was by performing in vivo enhancer replacement experiments in mice.
Which is no small feat.
Not at all.
Yeah.
They focused on a very heavily studied region of the genome, which is the sonic hedgehog locus.
The sonic hedgehog gene, or which is just essential for embryonic development, right?
True.
Especially for limb patterning.
Yeah, without it, things go very wrong. In mice, the specific expression of this gene in the developing limb is controlled by an enhancer known as the ZRS.
Right, and ZRS stands for the Zone of Polarizing Activity Regulatory Sequence.
That's a mouthful.
It really is. But for anyone who might be a little rusty on their developmental biology, the Zone of Polarizing Activity, or ZPA, is this very specific cluster of cells right at the edge of the developing limb bud.
Yeah, and those cells act as an organizing center. They send out the signals that basically tell the limb how to form its physical structure.
But the wild part is where the ZRS enhancer is located. It is an extreme distance from the gene. We are talking 848 kilobases away.
Which is just a massive span. And if a developing mouse embryo loses that specific enhancer, it totally fails to initiate expression in those limb bud cells.
And the result of that?
The mouse is born with severely truncated limbs.
Wow. But from a research perspective, that actually provides a really clear, highly visible phenotype to test against.
Absolutely. You have a massive distance to cover and a very obvious physical outcome if the connection fails.
So to test the mechanics of that distance, the researchers used what I like to call an engine swap methodology.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Okay, let's unpack this. It sounds like they basically took the engine out of a high-performance long-haul sports car, which is our ZRS, and they swapped in engines from standard commuter cars, just to see if those standard engines could drive the exact same massive distance.
That is exactly what they did. They took four known shorter-range limb enhancers. One was called HS7-2, which naturally operates at a range of about 411 kilobases.
So roughly half the distance.
Right. And another one was MM1492, which only reaches 73 kilobases.
A very short commute.
Very short.
Yeah.
And they literally transplanted these shorter-range enhancers right into the ZRS location, placing them that extreme 848 kilobases away from the gene.
But doing that swap in a living organism, that's really only the first step, right? Because they had to ensure the newly transplanted enhancers were actually active.
Yeah, that's a critical control.
Yeah.
If the shorter enhancers failed, they needed to know why. Was it because they simply couldn't span the distance? Or was it because the transplant process itself somehow, you know, broke them or inactivated them in those limb cells?
Right, you have to prove the engine is actually running. And they use some serious acronyms to verify that. They did advanced multi-ohm profiling on 14,000 individual cells using SNATAC-seq and SNRNA-seq.
Lots of alphabet soup there.
Yeah, so what are we actually looking at with those techniques?
Okay, so SNATAC-seq stands for Single Nucleus Assay for Transposase Accessible Chromatin.
Okay.
Essentially, it lets us look inside a single cell and physically see which sections of the tightly spooled DNA are open and accessible to the cellular machinery.
Ah, so if a region is open, that means the switch is technically available to be flipped.
Exactly. And then the SNRNA-seq comes in and looks at the RNA being produced, so that confirms what genes are actively being read.
So by combining these two, they could definitively prove that the substituted shorter-range enhancers were fully open, accessible, and turned on in the correct spatial location, which is those ZPA cells of the developing limb.
You got it. Returning to your analogy, they verified that the commuter engines were fueled, running, and revving perfectly.
Okay, so the commuter engines were running flawlessly in the exact right cellular environment.
Yep.
So what happened? Could they generate enough of a functional connection to span an 848 kilobase trip?
They could not. Not at all.
Wow. So they failed.
Complete failure. The standard short and medium enhancers could not activate the shoes gene from that location. The mice in this experiment developed severely truncated limbs.
Oh, so they were identical to the mice that had the ZRS enhancer completely deleted in the first place.
Exactly identical. And that failure is a really profound data point because it proves that simply being an active, functional enhancer in the correct tissue is just not enough.
Right.
The ability to activate a gene and the ability to project that activation over a vast genomic distance are actually two entirely different biological properties.
That is fascinating. So having established that these shorter enhancers lacked the necessary range, the researchers then had to look for structural differences, right?
Yeah, they had to figure out what was missing. So they looked closely at the genomic neighborhood of HS72. Remember, out of the four commuter enhancers they tested, HS72 had the longest native range at 411 kilobases.
Okay, so it was the best of the shorter range ones.
Right, and right adjacent to the HS72 enhancer, they identified this sequence that is highly conserved across mammalian evolution.
And evolutionary conservation is a huge red flag, right? In a good way. It's a strong indicator of function.
Absolutely. If nature preserves a specific string of DNA letters across millions of years of distinct species development, I mean, that sequence is doing something vital.
It's not just junk DNA.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
So they named this sequence the REX element, which stands for range extender.
Okay, range extender. But the functional tests they did on the REX element revealed something that feels deeply counterintuitive.
Oh, it really does?
Because on its own, the REX element is completely inert. Like, it possesses zero enhancer activity.
Not at all.
You cannot just place the REX element next to a gene and trigger transcription. It just doesn't turn anything on by itself.
Right, so if REX doesn't work as an enhancer on its own, what is it? Is it acting like some kind of molecular amplifier or, I don't know, a biological extension cord?
Well, the researchers proved it acts purely as a biological extension cord.
How did they prove that?
They demonstrated it by designing a chimeric sequence. They went back to the absolute shortest range enhancer from their initial group. That was MM1492, the one with a native range of only 73 kilobases.
Right, the one with the shortest commute.
And they chemically fused the REX element directly to it.
Oh, wow. So they attached the extension cord.
Exactly. They took this newly created combination and placed it back at that extreme 848 kilobase distance from the target gene.
And what happened?
The addition of that inert REX element extended the short enhancer's range by an entire order of magnitude. The chimeric sequence successfully activated the SHA gene across 848,000 base pairs.
That is incredible. So the mice actually grew fully developed lower limbs.
They did. Specifically, they developed the zugapod, which corresponds to the forearm or the calf, and the autopod, which is the hand or foot structure.
That is a total rescue.
It is. And they even developed extra digits, a condition called polydactyly.
Wait. Really? Extra digits?
Yeah.
Okay, actually, that polydactyly makes perfect biological sense in this context.
How so?
Because the short enhancer they used, MM1492, natively drives broad expression across the whole limb bud. It doesn't have the highly restricted, targeted expression of the native ZRS enhancer.
Oh, I see.
So when its range was artificially extended by REX, it successfully transmitted its naturally broad activation signal across that entire 848 kilobase distance. And that resulted in broader SHA activation overall, hence the extra digits.
Wow. Okay, so that physical rescue of the limb structure, even with extra toes, confirms the what's. But we really need to delve into the how. Like, how exactly does an inert sequence of DNA act as an extension cord?
Right, the mechanism. So the team analyzed the specific sequence of the REX element, and they found it contains these highly conserved motifs. Specifically, it's a repeating pattern of C or T, followed by ATATA sequences.
And just to clarify, a motif is basically a localized pattern of DNA letters that functions as a binding site, right? Like a landing pad for specific proteins.
Exactly. And these specific CTATA motifs are known binding sites for homeodomain transcription factors. In this particular context, they specifically recruit proteins called LHX and LEF1.
Okay, so if the REX element relies on these specific motifs to extend the range of a short enhancer, that naturally begs the question of how the original long-haul ZRS enhancer operates natively, right?
Of course. And when the researchers analyzed the sequence of the native ZRS enhancer, they found the exact same motifs. The exact CTATA sequences were embedded directly within its core structure.
So the long-range enhancer naturally contains its own built-in extension cord mechanism.
Yes, exactly.
That's brilliant. So to isolate the function of those motifs, I'm assuming they tried breaking them.
They did. They performed a highly targeted deletion. They went into the native ZRS enhancer and selectively mutated only those specific motifs. They made sure the rest of the enhancer sequence remained perfectly intact.
And mutating those specific binding sites completely abolished the ZRS enhancer's long-range capability.
Completely. The resulting mice exhibited severe limb reduction, which basically mirrored the exact effects of deleting the enhancer entirely.
But the experiment didn't end there, did it?
No, it didn't. Because they took that mutated ZRS enhancer, the one with the broken motifs, and they placed it really close to a promoter, just to test its function as a short-range switch.
And let me guess, it functioned perfectly.
It functioned perfectly. The mutated ZRS was fully capable of activating a gene, provided it didn't have to cross a massive distance to do it.
Yeah.
So those motifs are completely dispensable for the enhancer's core ability to turn on a gene in a specific tissue. They are exclusively required for the enhancer to span the architectural gaps of the genome.
Exactly. And this research really forces a paradigm shift in how we conceptualize gene regulation.
Yeah, it completely changes the framework.
Because we are looking at a highly modular system now. Mm. The function of an enhancer is split into distinct components. You have the activation module, which determines the spatial specificity, you know, like turning on in the limb cells.
Right.
And then you have the range module, which is dictated by these specific motifs. And that determines the operational distance.
It literally separates the where from the how far.
Yeah.
We can't really view an enhancer as a single monolithic entity anymore. It's really a composite of distinct instructions.
Exactly. Right. It's modular. Mm-hmm. And now the next frontier is really mapping the physical mechanics of this process. Like, how do the LHX and LEF1 proteins sitting on those motifs actually bridge the gap physically?
Right, which kind of goes back to our earlier discussion about the 3D loops and the cohesin proteins. If the loop itself isn't enough, what are the LHX and LEF1 proteins actually doing? Are they acting as a physical anchor? Like grabbing onto the cohesin structure to lock the specific enhancer and promoter together once the loop brings them close?
That is definitely a leading hypothesis right now.
Yeah.
Cohesin might extrude the loop to bring the general genomic neighborhoods together, creating this sort of transient proximity.
But the interaction is just too fleeting, right?
Yeah, or too unstable to sustain the continuous transcription that's required for development.
Mm-hmm.
So the LHX and LEF1 proteins bound to those REX motifs, they might act as highly specific docking clamps.
Docking clamps, I like that.
They stabilize the contact point between the distant enhancer and the promoter. They effectively cement the loop in the exact configuration needed for sustained communication.
And this modularity, it has to have profound implications for human genetics, particularly when we're analyzing the vast amounts of sequencing data we generate today, right?
Oh, absolutely. Think about genome-wide association studies. They frequently identify mutations in the non-coding regions of human DNA, but determining how a single altered letter actually causes a disease is just incredibly difficult.
Because our current functional annotation models usually look primarily at the activation potential of an enhancer, right? Like if we sequence a patient's genome and find a mutation, we might just test to see if that enhancer can still turn a gene on in a petri dish.
Right. And if the activation module is intact, the variant might just be dismissed as benign.
But, and this is the crazy part, this means when we look at genetic mutations in a patient, the disease might not be caused by a broken light bulb or even a broken switch.
Right.
The disease is happening because someone specifically cut the extension cord.
Exactly. If that patient's mutation strikes a specific motif, the activation module is fine and the gene itself is fine. The disease occurs solely because the molecular extension cord was severed. The signal just never reaches its intended target.
Wow. It introduces a completely new parameter into our analysis of genetic variants. We basically have to start screening for mutations that exclusively disrupt range.
We do. However, we also have to acknowledge the limitations of where the science is right now. This modularity was rigorously proven at the SCLOCUS, examining one specific developmental pathway in mice.
Right. And biology frequently utilizes different strategies in different cellular contexts.
Exactly.
So because we found the extension cord mechanism in one neighborhood of the city doesn't guarantee the exact same wiring is used in every other district.
Right. So the immediate next steps require scaling this whole approach up.
Huh?
We need to systematically map these REX elements and their associated motifs across other genomic loci and in completely different cell types like neural tissue or cardiac cells.
Did the researchers see any hints of it elsewhere?
They did, actually. They noted that these CT8TA motifs are heavily enriched at long-distance limb enhancer loci across the entire genome, which strongly suggests this is a widespread mechanism rather than just some isolated anomaly.
That's huge. We basically need to build a comprehensive map of the dark matter of the genome, identifying every single extension cord and anchoring point.
Yeah. And we also need to investigate whether other completely different sequence motifs perform similar range-extending functions in other tissues.
Because the ATA motif might just be specific to developmental pathways driven by those homeodomain transcription factors.
Right. Other systems might use entirely different molecular clamps to achieve the same physical stabilization.
So if we had to distill the central insight of this deep dive, it's that transcriptional enhancers rely on distinct sequence signatures, like the REX element and its specific motifs, to successfully bridge massive genomic distances.
Exactly. It physically uncouples an enhancer's cell type specificity from its long-range reach. Distance in the nucleus is not just a passive hurdle. Bridging it requires active, highly specialized genetic instructions that are completely independent from the instructions used to just activate the gene.
It's incredible. So what does this mean for our future ability to engineer custom genetic circuits or our power to diagnose complex developmental diseases that are currently just hiding in the vast unmapped dark matter of our genome?
It really opens up a whole new world of possibilities.
It really does. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Quiet of the genome, miles of folded wire. A whisper wants to reach a spark and set it all on fire. Some signals work up close, like hands across a table. But some have to cross the dark where nothing looks stable. Future is clear.